You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. This is episode 259 of the Columbia Calling podcast. We've had some great episodes so far this year, starting the year with Michael Evans of the National Security Archive in Washington, D.C., talking about the need for a robust truth commission in Colombia. Then we had the crazy Dutchman, Adrian Alselma, on the show talking about the what are we expecting for the politics in 2019 in Colombia? And then after that, we talked to a Scottish student and teacher, Sarah Jacks, who's teaching at the Pedagogica, who explained to us a little bit more about the student marches in Bogota and around the country. So very interesting times in Colombia, never a dull moment. But to say we have a very special guest is an understatement, because he's a repeat visitor to the Columbia Calling radio show podcast. His name's Matt Aaron, and those of you who've been following the Columbia Calling podcast since its very early days several years ago, Matt was on the show talking about his business exporting uchuvas, or golden fruit, back to the United States.
Golden berries.
Sorry, there we go. He's jumping in there. But all the way back, he was talking about that. But now his life has taken quite a different turn. He's on the line to us from Mexico. And Matt is working for Bitcoin.com. So I'm going to let him plunge in, and the idea is that we talk about the importance and the significance of Bitcoin as a currency for both Colombia and Venezuela. So, Matt, welcome back on Columbia Calling.
Hey, Richard, thanks so much for having me. I love the show. I also admire you, man. I mean, I was in Colombia for 8 years, and just seeing you there setting up your hotel and your life there, I always looked up to you as a fellow expat, man. So I'm very happy to be on the show.
Well, that's very flattering, and that will get you everywhere. Now, just tell us a little bit, how did you end up working for Bitcoin.com?
Sure. So actually, it all goes back to the Chuba in Boyacá. So, and I still have this business. Although it's more on the back burner, I've hired someone to do most of the things that I used to do. So in April of 2017, almost 2 years ago, we had a helada, a frost, right? And we lost most of our organic crop, which is our bread and butter, organic uchuva. And it was a blessing in disguise. You know, it cost a lot of money, but it was a wake-up call. Matt, you can be dependent on this fruit business for a number of reasons. And I entered the creative active phase, as Robert Greene would say, and started learning new things. I took a course in cryptography, cryptography, cryptocurrency, that's what it's based on. And then I read a book on Bitcoin and I got hooked. And Richard knows I'm a fellow podcaster. I started a hobby podcast around cryptocurrencies as a way to learn about it and get a chance to talk to people that I usually would not have business speaking with. And I interviewed the owner of Bitcoin.com, Roger Ver, comically known as Bitcoin Jesus, because he's been in it since the beginning and he's kind of an evangelist for Bitcoin. And after the interview, I proposed to him that I run their podcast network, and that was December of 2017. And here I am, and I run the podcast network for Bitcoin.com. And then Latin America, I head up our efforts. We're specifically focused on Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I mean, truly fascinating. So basically, through an interview, you established a new road, a new route for your life, and you're focusing on Venezuela. And let's come to Venezuela. Well, actually, it makes for a good listening. So Bitcoin.com, and I've got it open here. I've got the website open, and you've directed me to the page Bitcoin.com/Venezuela. This is pretty incredible stuff here. So tell us about this campaign that Bitcoin.com has for Venezuela.
Sure. So we've partnered with AirTM, who's running an airdrop. AirTM is an exchange in Venezuela. One thing I didn't know before I started this is that most Venezuelans have online bank accounts much higher than Colombia and maybe even the United States. Just because you have online banking doesn't mean you obviously have prosperity, but AirTM allows you to hook up your Venezuelan online bank account. They're in multiple countries, but Venezuela being one of them, and sell between dollars, Bitcoin, bolivares, Bitcoin Cash, cryptocurrencies. And they are raising money to airdrop cryptocurrencies to 100,000 Venezuelans. And on May 27th, 100,000 Venezuelans will receive Bitcoin Cash. And so I've been talking with them and working with them and say, hey, this is great, amazing. And they've raised some donations already. We've also contributed, but just giving people this cryptocurrency, they may not know what to do with it. Also, we'd like them to be able to spend it because that's the idea of a cryptocurrency. So we have a team on the ground and we're getting as many businesses to start accepting Bitcoin Cash and convincing them why they should do it for their personal interest. So on May 27th, inside of the Bitcoin.com wallet app, you'll be able to, with your Bitcoin Cash, you'll be able to see whether you're in Caracas, Maracaibo, Barquisimeto, Valencia, stores around there where you can spend your Bitcoin Cash as opposed to just converting it back to bolivares.
Mm. It's not the big risk is everyone will want to put it back into bolivares or into dollars to have something in their hands.
And what do you mean by risk?
Well, because I mean, the idea is that we surpass, I think, and this is a different economy. I mean, the same things you can buy, but without tapping into the conventional economy that's so affected by the politics in Venezuela.
That's right. So our thesis is that the Venezuelan economy is broken, cannot be fixed how it currently is. So that's the thesis we're operating on. Mm-hmm. We could be wrong, but when we see, last month or is it 2 months ago when they just cut zeros off the bolivar and I think in the last month they've raised minimum wage 3 times and, it seems like a disaster that cannot be solved. Yeah. So the only way to solve that is to create a new economy. And mm-hmm. we think that commerce should happen exclusively with cryptocurrencies. And so people are able to transact with cryptocurrencies, able to send money to family back and forth with cryptocurrencies, which is happening now. This is not something that, hasn't happened. That would be one step in the right direction to changing that economy.
Mm. And so 100,000 Venezuelans will receive a cash drop, a Bitcoin. How much is that? What are you looking to raise and how much for each of those 100,000 Venezuelans?
Sure. So you can go to airdropvenezuela.org to learn more about the airdrop. But there's multiple cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin Cash has received the most donations so far. The value fluctuates. They want to have $1 million in total, so $10 per Venezuelan. The campaign at this point is just over $100,000. So they're about 10% in. But whatever is raised will be, whether that's more or less, will be sent over. But I think we'd like to get the next 4 months, I would like it to get maybe $250,000 of Bitcoin Cash. So each Venezuelan gets $2.50. But right now, where we're close to a dollar, is also very workable. I mean, you can buy a meal for a dollar in Venezuela. I mean, a cheap meal, like a rice and beans meal. But it would be nice to get as much as we can.
So what it remind my listeners what the minimum wage in Venezuela is right now.
Man, it changes so much. Maduro changed it 2 days ago. I think it's right now. It's at don't quote me on this, but I think it's around $4. By the time you publish this episode, Richard, in 2 weeks from now, like on January 29th, it may have been raised again. I can tell you that like there's a really great tweet in December that when Maduro entered power, if you would have bought $1 million worth of Bolivares, it would be worth 37 cents. And that's December 18th. Mm. Now, it might be worth, like 20 cents. But it's very low. It's a couple dollars a month. Everyone wants to work for a minimum wage. To me, that's an example of a broken economy when, minimum wage is, the $2 to $4 range, and a cheap meal without chicken costs $1. And if you want to eat chicken, this is based on people that are working for us in different parts of the country, somewhere around $7. It's definitely a lot of money.
Sadly, despite in our, let's say, perspective, it's a tiny amount of money, but sadly, the reality is it's a significant sum of cash for a Venezuelan today.
Right. And it's a significant amount of money. And the inflows of money from, because everyone's escaping Venezuela and sending money back to their family, known as remittance payments. The amount of money will surely increase in 2019, year over year from 2018. It's been increasing year, meaning it's just so hard to produce in that economy that people from the outside have to send them money in order to survive.
And so tell me this thing, people, I think one of the key questions here, and these businesses in Venezuela accept Bitcoin then?
So yeah, we're signing them up. We got like a couple hundred so far. Tracky, which is kind of like a Carrefour in Colombia, they already accept cryptocurrencies. But to say that it's widely used, I think that's a huge exaggeration. It's still just in the very beginning. I know that I actually met a Japanese fellow when we had our Bitcoin.com meetup group in Bogota, and he was able to use cryptocurrencies exclusively on a trip for hotel, taxi, and restaurant. But it's still a minority, and most people still use cryptocurrency as a way to store value because it holds value similar to gold, whereas the Bolivar just continues to drop and to move money in and out of the country.
Definitely. But this Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies you're talking about have nothing to do with Maduro's Petro.
No. So the Petro is, I believe that the Petro was started because, from people I've talked to, the enchufados. Are you familiar with that term?
No, but tell us.
The enchufados are, I don't know if they can still do that right now, but they're like friends of Maduro, right? Okay. So if you're in Venezuela and you're friends with Maduro and you're in his group, you're still living a pretty nice lifestyle. And the way you want to see it in any country, the difference between the black market rate for a currency and the official government rate of a currency tells a lot about the health of the economy. And the enchufados are able to, the black market rate, the Bolivar has much value. So they can, they can trade dollars to Bolivares, and then through like the official, bank exchange that only they have access to, they can rebuy dollars and essentially make dollars. I don't know if that's happening today. Some people have told me that they can't do that anymore, but at least at certain times, certain people were able to do that, just basically playing the exchange rates, the black market versus the quote unquote official that Maduro sets. And the reason I mentioned that is, foreign bank accounts, money that can be censored, money that can be frozen for Maduro and, his groups, they've had a lot of trouble with those foreign bank accounts all over the world. This is something that has been told to me again. I haven't seen these bank accounts, but it seems quite likely that, U.S. bank accounts, European bank accounts, they would want to freeze Maduro's money, right? Pretty much any country besides a couple. And so raising money for cryptocurrency is great because, you control the funds. And I believe that they created the Petro tied to their oil reserves. There's been no sign of the money that Maduro claims they've raised for this cryptocurrency. But he has said that pensions are going to be paid in this fictitious cryptocurrency, the national cryptocurrency, the Petro. Mm. But yeah, in summary, it's another money grab by Maduro. But yeah, I mean, there's no significance of this, of the Petro, and it's not going to do anything for Venezuelans, but maybe Maduro and his chufados.
So it just sort of sounded to me that he invented it as he was standing up there on the podium, you know, he needed to fill some air, but I mean, it does exist, right?
I guess. I mean, I know certain banking, bank accounts in Venezuela, you can log in and see it, but I still have not spoken to people so I will say this, Richard, other cryptocurrencies you can buy and sell in exchanges, like all the cryptocurrencies, even the ones that are quite ridiculous. I still haven't seen anyone be able to buy and sell Petros or a way to track transactions on the blockchain for the Petro. Maybe it exists, but I've never seen it. And I feel like it would cross my radar if it does. At this point, I think it's a pile of crap.
Yeah, well, you know, and hearing it from you is very reassuring. You're someone who works in this business and knows all about it, and far more than I could ever hope to know about this. So it's a real pleasure to have you on the show explaining to us a little bit more about the importance of these new technology, new currency out there. Matt, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back. And let's, in the next segment of the show, we'll steer this conversation towards Colombia, because you have plenty to say about Bitcoin in Colombia. This is episode 259 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I'm speaking to Matt Aaron, who's currently in Mexico, but he is he works for Bitcoin.com, and is explaining to us a little bit more about Bitcoin's role in Colombia, Venezuela, and of course, cryptocurrency's role. And we've covered quite a lot of Venezuela and this massive airdrop of money that will come to Venezuela. It's a campaign that comes to a head on May 27th. So we'll be watching out to see how that goes, because it's fascinating. If you want any more information, check out www.bitcoin.com/Venezuela. And on the bitcoin.com website, plenty of interesting information. Okay, so we're going to take a short break and we'll be back with Matt in the second segment of this show. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia. This is episode 259 of the Colombia Calling podcast. Thank you for listening thus far. We've had an fascinating conversation with Matt Aaron up there in Mexico. He's talking about Bitcoin and Bitcoin.com, where he works. We covered Venezuela. We covered Venezuela because, you know, I mean, it's our neighbor. It's completely affecting us here in Colombia. And the things that I had no idea about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies and how they might, or how they hope to help Venezuelans in this broken economy overseen by President Maduro at the moment. But let's wind this back. And this is the moment where we really can sort of, let's say, delve into a bit more about Bitcoin. And I want to ask Matt, I mean, the fundamental question: why should I buy Bitcoin? Or why should the unknowing public like me buy Bitcoin or a cryptocurrency?
Sure. So I'm not going to recommend to anyone to buy Bitcoin. I think you should do your own research and then decide if Bitcoin's interesting to you. Remember, this is voluntary. It's not like a government currency where you're coerced into using it. I think everyone should study and learn about Bitcoin. Just like in 1996, the imperfect comparison is everyone should learn about the internet. It's going to be big. And as you can tell, Richard, I mean, just buying internet stocks, that was one way to get involved with the internet, but you could also learn to make web pages or start a podcast about the internet and the future of e-commerce, or, you know, start a social media company. There were so many different things you could do to get involved with the internet. And I think Bitcoin and blockchain is the exact same thing that respect in terms of ways to get involved. You don't just have to purchase it. I do think, Richard, that your hotel in Mompox should start accepting Bitcoin Cash and cryptocurrencies as a way to get your first cryptocurrency easily with a low amount of risk. Mm-hmm. But here's what I would say. Let's start about, you know, why Bitcoin, and relate this to Colombia. Our dear, mi querido Colombia. Bitcoin is censorship resistant money. And why is that important? Well, with money today, right, we don't really own our own money. It's we are, you know, we have it in bank accounts. If we want to take our money out, the reason we don't own our own money, we have to ask the banks for permission. I was telling Richard before we start recording with my fruit business, if I want to send a payment, $22,000 to Colombia from my U.S. bank account, I can't just send that. I have to ask for permission. I have to say what it's for. Colombia needs to know what invoices are being paid. You know, they have to have all this information, name, social security number, business bank account numbers, blah, blah, blah. So it's really, they have our money and then we ask them for permission. And you've seen this in countries around the world where bank accounts get seized and closed because you didn't have control of your money. Bitcoin allows you to have full control of your money. It cannot be seized from you. You own it. And you're also able to send money without having approval from a third party. An easy example is with international credit cards. They go to a lot of businesses in Colombia. They may not accept international credit cards. Well, that's changed quite a bit since I first got there in 2010. But international transactions, right? It can be very difficult to send money between countries, and there's these fees. You want to send money back and forth, you have to use Western Union, which takes a huge amount of fees. And again, you have to be approved for these payments. They may be blocked. So censorship-resistant money means that when you make a Bitcoin transaction, it's broadcasted to a payment network that no one owns, that everyone has a copy of, and can be verified online. And that's that. A Bitcoin transaction is a Bitcoin transaction. There's no way to censor your spending or receiving of money. And I think that's very important for Colombia because, I mean, we've seen this in the past, you know, bank accounts getting frozen, not allowing you to move money, money controls. This enables freedom and power for citizens that could otherwise have it taken away. And I mean, you see this with land rights and, I mean, all over Colombia and Venezuela and Iran, you know, in countries that have totalitarian regimes around the world.
It's, I mean, I understand fully this censorship-resistant money. The system that we have now is imperfect, of course, but it does seem that there are rules in place to try and, you know, let's say, organize things. I don't like it when I have to do a transfer, an international transfer from a travel agency or whomever. Even, you know, even around $1,000, $2,000, I get called up by the bank and then I have to give them a document saying, where did this money come from? What's it doing? And it has to be then reported to the central bank and then proven that I'm not laundering anything. And I said, well, you know, whatever, with this, that small amount of money, why would I be laundering it? But I mean, what I worry about this censorship resistant money, and you know where I'm going with this. I mean, Colombia is a land of, let's say, vibrant banditry and, of course, illicit goods. Will this not facilitate a flow, unchecked flow of cash for various industries in Colombia?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that. You know, I look at the drug war and I think all drugs would be, you know, should be legal. And I think that would save a lot of lives and create more peace around the world. I mean, that's a whole nother issue, right, that yeah. We can get into. But there's no doubt that with whatever currency, there will be money laundering. Mm-hmm. I will say that the amount of money that's been laundered with the dollar and the euro is so high in billions and billions of dollars. And you see this every month, a bank like Danske Bank, they launder $240 billion. These people that are putting these monetary controls in are the same ones that get caught and profit off of laundering money. So I don't think, to me, that's not really an issue because it's not like money laundering is being combated very well today. Mm-hmm. Another way to look at it, I think that, I don't think that censorship, you know, resisting censorship, it will be used for some illicit means. That's not a valid reason to not use it because of all the other benefits of it and in the current system. Like a way to look at it, if you really understand how money moves around Colombia, what about fine art? One of the best ways to launder money is with fine art. Why? Because you buy a painting, you move it around, you can say, hey, was that painting worth, you know, Richard and I look at a painting, oh, that's worth $100,000 or that's worth $10,000. We don't know, man. And you can change the money. But I think it would be ridiculous to say we should get rid of fine art and take it away from museums, because fine art is, you know, one of the biggest culprits of money laundering around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true. I mean, the benefits. Okay, so we're on board. We're on board with censorship-resistant money. So where do we go from here in terms of Colombia?
Good question. I think that, and again, this is an experiment, Richard. I say that I don't have the answers. I think Bitcoin is a bottom-up movement, meaning that the people kind of decide where it goes. You know, we can work on projects and campaigns and learn and you know, do a small part, but it's ultimately going to be decided by the people. I think that some things that could happen that are already happening are remittance payments. I think you got to start small, things that work right now that are better than the alternative. Mm-hmm. We mentioned the piece off air in Caucasia about that really brave journalist in Caucasia, in Antioquia, who, you know, speaking the truth, right? And the person that wrote that is a buddy of mine, Matthew DeSalvo. And you know, I taught him how to send money back to his UK bank account by using localbitcoins.com. And he actually, instead of losing money, he was actually making money based on the fact Bitcoin is a little bit cheaper in Colombia and at arbitrage. But the reason I mentioned that is right now, anyone in Colombia can send money to Europe, United States, at either zero cost or a fraction of a percent. Maybe they have a kid studying in Paris or Australia for remittance payments. Or you could send money back home, you know, to Colombia using Bitcoin. And it's, if you don't have a bank account, it's much, much cheaper than something like Western Union. So I think the immediate benefits, I would think remittance payments is important. Mm-hmm. And then and getting more businesses to start accepting it so they can get exposure to cryptocurrencies, because I worry about Colombia and that in the current system, you've seen this with Venezuela, you've seen this with the, you know, the Argentine peso, currencies all around the world, right? Where the country's economy goes to crap and the citizens have to suffer, meaning that you know, you've built your businesses, you have a couple hotels, restaurants, but everything's denominated. You know, you have all your cash, maybe you sell it off for cash, and then the currency crashes. You're subjected to that and your savings, because the fiat currency that you're forced to use in the country, you know, in this case, the Colombian peso, goes to zero. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if people will start thinking about money differently and diversify their assets to something like a cryptocurrency. Obviously, risky, but just kind of waking people up that, hey, why do I have to be subjected to the Colombian peso, a currency that has not held value by any means over the years?
This sort of way, as while Bitcoin is, you know, in the ether and obviously exists through the various forms of payment networks and the integrity in databases and so on. So, you know, I've got it in the ether and so it's almost like not offshore. I wouldn't say it. It's like offshore banking, but without a bank.
Yeah, for sure. And so most, another thing that's pretty interesting is another term that I'd say is pretty fascinating. It's called judgment resistance. Big mm-hmm. companies like Apple, they don't have, no big company that has, you know, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars keeps all of their money in one bank account. Mm-hmm. One of the main reasons they do that is, we talked about earlier how governments can freeze bank accounts. They cannot take that risk. Imagine if Apple had all their money frozen at once. So they spread it across bank accounts. With Bitcoin, if you own your own money, you are not subject to courts freezing your accounts. Hence, one of the reasons why Maduro is doing that with the Petro, mm-hmm. Assuming he actually has sold any of this. But I think that's a very important reason, becoming your own bank and taking control. I think that individual sovereignty is quite important as we enter the information age.
Mm. It's really fascinating to think about this time and age in which we are living, this period of serious international unrest. We look at the UK, we look at the US, we look at what's going on in the Middle East, we look at what's going on in Venezuela, we look at the worrisome situation of the politics here in Colombia. You've got a government with no, let's say, no plan. So we can't think that conventional international investment is really going to take off in this period of time. This is all giving rise to an opportunity for a new system such as this cryptocurrency. So as a small business owner, how do I get involved, let's say, in accepting Bitcoin?
Sure. I think it's pretty simple. Download the Bitcoin.com wallet. Mm-hmm. And you can get a sticker. I might be able to send you a sticker if you send me an email. I think I still have some in a storage place in Bogota. Okay. Just put a sticker. We accept Bitcoin Cash. We accept Bitcoin in your, in your window. Uh-huh. And people can pay in Bitcoin for their meal. And you'd be wondering, what about the La Dian? You know?
Yeah.
Well, so you could either, maybe you pay La Dian. I mean, I could see it both ways. Let's just say you do want to pay your taxes in Colombia. So all you have to do is, let's say that you have a meal. Primitivo restaurant in Chapinero accepts Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. My that was kind of my go-to spot when I was and let's say it's 45,000 pesos. Mm-hmm. All you do, if you're a restaurant, you say, okay, 45,000 pesos converted to Bitcoin Cash is X amount. Between two phones, you scan it. Transaction fee going to be less than a cent. As you know, if you run a business in Colombia, credit card transaction fees can be as high as sometimes 4 or 5%. Right, so you're gonna save money there, and you just record this transaction in Colombian pesos. You don't tell the Dian about the Bitcoin, and it's perfectly legal. Obviously, you don't tell the Dian about Bitcoin not because it's illegal, but because governments are pretty slow to keep up with things, especially La Dian, the IRS of Colombia. So it's that's pretty much it, and your business in 5 minutes, you're now accepting Bitcoin Cash. I wouldn't be worried that all of a sudden you have all this Bitcoin, because maybe 1% of your transactions or less will be in this, but you'll also be able to submit your website to many directors around the world and say, hey, we accept Bitcoin Cash. It's free marketing for your business, right? You're going to get links back to your website and publicity, and a lot of Bitcoiners, a lot of people that tend to travel, digital nomads, people with money, well, they see that. They'll want to come to your restaurant, to your hotel, just because you're accepting Bitcoin. It shows you get it, that you're kind of in the avant-garde and forward thinking.
It's I like the idea. I am worried about the DIAN, as you say, the Internal Revenue Service or Inland Revenue for Colombia. They are looking to get their hands on anything they possibly can, like any tax system, state tax system. They turn up, want to see the books, they want to see the things, everything has to be done online, everything has to be submitted. But of course they're going to come after Bitcoin. I mean, of course they're going to come after it. And that's what worries me. If they don't understand it fully, then how can I protect myself through this kind of cryptocurrency market?
That's a great question. I don't know how to deal with the DIAN. I do know an accountant for an exchange, and I'm the current president. I don't know if you saw that he talks about, hey, we're going to be friendly for cryptocurrency companies. That, to be fair, has not been the case, because the only exchange in Colombia, Peru, and Chile, it's called Buda, BUDA. As of the time I last spoke with them in December, they were completely shut down, and it's this game where they, the company of politicians has one thing to the news, and then the banks internally, the superintendencia says, hey, but don't let anyone transact with this company. And they're unable to work with Colombian bank accounts, right? So that's a fair concern. I do think governments will come after people. I don't think they're going to come after you if you have 200,000 pesos worth of transactions in cryptocurrencies. That's a fair thing to be concerned about. But I don't think that unless you're dealing with a significant amount of money, will that be an issue? But it's going to be the type of thing, just kind of like I would say Uber, where the issue may have to be forced. There's no doubt about it. There is a risk in any type of revolution, and this is definitely a social and economic revolution. There are some risks for getting involved, which is why I think you should learn about what it is and think about your values and what's important to you, and then decide how you want to integrate that into your life, if at all.
So what I see here is, you know, I can accept Bitcoin, let's say in pesos or Bitcoin for my business, but rather than trying to convert it through Buddha into pesos, because now, as you say, Buddha has been shut down, the website here for Colombia and Chile, better that if I wanted to convert it back to pounds or dollars in a different international account.
Yeah, well, Richard, I wouldn't do it in Colombia. I mean, I think, though, that you could also sell it on localbitcoins.com and just get cash for it. Mm. But I'm going to say I'm 95% sure. If I go to your Mompox hotel, how much is your hotel per night?
Let's say 200,000 pesos.
200,000, yeah. All right. And let's say, so I stay two nights, 400,000 pesos. If I pay you 400,000 pesos worth of Bitcoin, you create a commercial invoice, 400,000 pesos, say paid in cash. How is the Dion ever going to know that I paid you in Bitcoin?
Mm-hmm. True. True.
There's no, and it's worth noting that the infrastructure, just like the internet in 1996, where I remember where you could, they didn't even have verification, and I was 13 when I did this. And in 1996, that means you could enter a credit card, and they wouldn't verify like the 16 digits if it was an actual credit card number. You could buy things online. Mm-hmm. As a rebellious teenager, I remember buying a domain and making a website with a fake credit card number, and they didn't verify. There was no SSL. There was no security. The reason I mention that is not just to share a story of being a stupid teenager, but to understand that, yeah, there is a lot of work from the infrastructure making this easy to spend and use that is going to take a couple years before I think it's widespread, there's widespread adoption of cryptocurrencies.
Sure. Sure. I mean, we do have a government, of course, as you said, that says, oh, we'll be open to Bitcoin, we'll be open to cryptocurrency, but they're not at all. They don't have the people who are understanding it. I mean, obviously I am, I have a small business. I'm interested in generating income. I think I will, of course, investigate the feasibility of Bitcoin for my business. Are there places, where would you recommend that I read up, or what publications, there are books out there that are the best for this that you would recommend?
Yeah, I'd say that, you can always fire up a Bitcoin documentary on Netflix, but I'd start with a book. I learned the history first. It's called How Money Got Free. Mm-hmm. And you can buy that on Kindle or in paperback. That would be the first book I would read. Anyone listening, send me an email, matt@bitcoin.com. I have plenty of other things. If you want to go deep on the technical side or the economic side, that I can send you. But I would start with How Money Got Free.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. It's very interesting indeed. And all right. Well, it does sound so simple. It does sound so simple, but I do see, but everything has, there are always peaks and troughs, aren't there? And as you say, well, any financial market's going to have risks. I mean, that's the reality of the world in which we live, whether it's cryptocurrency or whether it's the dollar, the euro, or the peso. I mean, there's going to be a risk. So, I find it so very interesting. I'm a little bit overwhelmed. I don't know how my listeners.
For sure. And I'm sure everyone listening that hasn't heard of Bitcoin before is overwhelmed. It took me months and months to understand, and I'm still learning things. But Richard, can I make a comment about risk?
Go on.
In life, I think we should be more worried about hidden risks as opposed to the risks we all know about. We think a lot about terrorist attacks, school shootings, being robbed in our house, losing our job, things like that. But I think the hidden risk, a financial system that can just blow up, a government that can disintegrate over a short amount of time, maybe the U.S. dollar becoming unstable, things like diabetes or infection from surgery, which are much higher rates in terms of, deaths than terrorist attacks and things of that nature. So I think about hidden risk and the things that kind of come and smack you in the face out of nowhere. I believe that you have every right to be skeptical about Bitcoin. I don't know how you cannot be skeptical about Bitcoin when you first hear about it, unless you're a genius that can calculate everything and understand things very quickly. But I think you should be very skeptical about the U.S. dollar, about the Colombian peso. I mean, the U.S. dollar and the fiat-based currency with no backing of gold has only been around since 1971. And it would be naive to think that we've reached peak money. Like, this is the best money. as a society that we ever had. And so I just think, I'd like everyone to think about the hidden risks in their lives and being aware that, that maybe there are certain things that we're not thinking about that should be the actual things we should be worrying about and vice versa.
Well, I like this. I like the system that we have to think more, not just take things for granted, that we need to reflect on a system in which we live. This to me is important. This to me, you know, it provides fodder for your gray matter. You know, this is important. And like you say, the system that we work on, it really only dates back to 1971. It's just a blink in the eye, really, a blink of the eye. And so I am going to read up further on this. I am going to investigate the cryptocurrency, and I will, and of course take on all of your advice, but equally I will avoid the petrol like the plague.
Avoid the petrol. And also, don't take my advice. I mean, think of this as discourse and just opening the conversation. Hopefully you can use this episode to start exploring Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to give you a couple more use cases in Colombia, things that actually I've done or been a part of. One is, let's say you are a graphic designer or a programmer in a small town in Antioquia or Cauca, and you got skills. And you want to take money, or sorry, take money, I'm speaking Spanish. If you want to charge for your services. If I find you online, maybe to make a web page, and I'm in France, I'll say, hey, how do I pay you? Just pay me in Bitcoin. With Bitcoin Cash, it's a fraction of a cent transaction fees. If someone that doesn't have a bank account, I can pay them instantly. It takes, a couple seconds. And especially in places that are dangerous in Colombia and Venezuela, if you go to the bank and pick up a Western Union, if it gets there and they take 30% out, you have a target on your back. Yeah. So in terms of living in a danger zone or a refugee, the great thing about Bitcoin is you can carry a lot of money around. I say carry with air quotes, but no one knows. And so if you need to escape, that money is still with you. Obviously, if you cross the border and Richard, you cross the Venezuelan border or let's say come from Venezuela into Colombia as a refugee, and you have $10,000 in gold and Rolexes in your bag, you think they're going to let you escape with that? No way. But if you understand Bitcoin, no one's going to be able to know that you own this. And I've seen and talked to people that have started new lives in other countries because they receive their cash online from Bitcoin. And then they finally get out of the country they want to leave, whether that's Colombia or Venezuela. They get to Panama, they get to Atlanta. And hey, they might have a couple thousand, maybe even $10,000 saved up to start their new life. And if you look at the odds of being a immigrant to a new country, having that $5,000 head start makes it much more likely you're going to succeed than starting with zero.
Yes. Now I can see it working in that one. This is really, really interesting, Matt, but unfortunately we're out of time. And I know that this episode 259 will generate many questions from my listeners and hopefully drive some more people towards researching, investigating, and thinking about cryptocurrency. I certainly have learned more than I knew before this show, and I'm going to read up. I'm a curious person by nature, and it's something I think, obviously it's not going away. It's something that's going to stick around. It's been around for 10 years, even if you could believe it or not. But it's just so very, it's there's something compelling about it, I think. So let me just take this moment to say thank you so much, Matt. And people can get in touch with you at matt@bitcoin.com. They can check out the website bitcoin.com and read up.
Hey, yeah, exactly. I think this episode is just about waking up and understanding that there's other alternatives. The future is going to be quite different. And if you can see these things coming ahead of time, there's a lot of benefit for anyone listening. And also, I want to thank you, Richard. I mean, what is this, over 5 years now with the podcast? It's reached 300 episodes this year. Just doing something for that many years shows a lot of dedication. And I thank you for the service you're doing for the country of Colombia, man.
Well, thank you so much for that. That's very appreciated. Sometimes I feel like a voice in the wilderness. But anyway, thank you again. We've been speaking to Matt Aaron. He's Matt at bitcoin.com. Check out the website, www.bitcoin.com. All of the links will be on our Facebook page and, of course, on Twitter and so on. This is episode 259 of the Columbia Calling podcast. It's been a really interesting and compelling episode. This is us saying goodbye today. We'll be back next week with further interviewee, something to do with Colombia. So thank you for listening, and goodbye from me here in Bogota. Here, speak to you next week. Bye-bye.